You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Welcoming again one of my most frequent guests, doing some wrap-up about Rebecca Roth, Alan William Powell from Down Under. Alan, welcome back to The Real Deal.
Jim, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
Alan, you know, it seems to me the evidence is simply overwhelming at this point in time that Rebecca Roth and Monica Gaynor, which may or may not be her real name, are one and the same. We have audio comparisons, the voice, the gestures, the laugh, the coquettish manner. They're all the same. The appearance, when you take Monica and put on a wig and glasses, they're the same. It even turns out that her co-host on the Fix Your Health show named Michael and her co-host on her new show, whom she refers to as Ramjet, appear to be one and the same. I've even formed the hypothesis, Alan, that they are married.
Yeah, I've got nothing to disprove that. I think that would seem a reasonable assumption. I think we've really put, well, I was going to say the cat amongst the pigeons, but I think we've really upset the apple cart. I think Rebecca's on her way out now. There's just too much evidence to show that she's this other person. And anybody who seems to approach her, this morning we were talking to Scott Bennett about this, and he gave us the information about his emails that he sent to her. And the responses were really ultimately much the same as that response that I got when I asked if she would come on your show. It's just it's not credible. We can't give her any credence anymore in anything, I don't think.
Well, I think you're right. Not only that, but her hysterical reaction to my posts about her questioning her identity were so far over the top, Alan. I mean, they were vicious, vindictive, nasty, unsubstantiated, completely gratuitous, purely fabricated. To me, that if there was any lingering doubt in anyone's mind, that ought to have clinched it.
Well, another thing occurred to me this morning when we were talking to Scott. It's if you've got something that you want to say and it's kind of alternate media, where do you go? The first port of call is going to be James Fetzer. This didn't happen with her. I mean, you're so open with it, you'll even have these flat earthers on. But
And rue the day that I dare.
Yeah, let's leave flat earthers alone, shall we? But for her not to want to go on your show to broadcast her ideas, if they were her ideas, about 9/11, it's just odd. It's just very, very odd.
Yeah, I quite agree. And Alan, I know you got a set of slides here, so let's take a review of Rebecca and her dazzling story, you know, representing this incredible transformation from airline stewardess with 20 or 30 years of experience to astounding 9/11 investigative journalist. Tell us more about Rebecca.
Well, As you know, during the course of the 2 hours that we spoke this morning, I think we all kind of worked out she's a fraud. Let's have a look at the second image. She's gone to the extent now of telling, and I got this recently. I don't think the people who sent it to me want to be disclosed as yet. So the producers at Talk Network talked to Rebecca and asked her about her name. And flat out, if she was Monica, and she denied it.
What would they expect her to say, Alan, if she really is the fraud we've proven her to be? What would they expect her to say? Oh, yes, I'm a fraud?
Well, look, I don't know what the status of this is, because when we played that audio tape of her, her saying who she was, or rather her husband, if he is, saying who she was, I thought that was a Talk Network show. So there's got to be someone at Talk Network who knows who Rebecca is and knows who Monica is. So I can't really understand this. So if we had the one show there from her, which was the Fix Your Health stuff, and there's also the Fix Your Health stuff on YouTube, surely those people would know if she was the same person without having to ask. So I don't know what the status of this email is.
Maybe when they brought her in, they already knew. Maybe they're giving her cover and legitimacy by featuring her on the air.
Possibly.
The deception works up into this Talk Network
channel. Yeah. Let's have a look at the next one. What's this one?
No, we don't have it up yet. Chance hasn't put it up yet.
Chance, put that one up.
There we go.
This is from me on the 16th, I think. Yeah, 16th. You're aware I've claimed you are Monica of Mike and Monica. I offer you the chance to state that you're not. Appear on the real deal and discuss how you claim I am wrong. Nothing. No response whatsoever. Jim, look, if I say to you that you're that well-known diamond thief who is in England in 1960 called James Fetzer, what are you going to say to me?
Don't be ridiculous.
Exactly.
I'd be much better off if I were.
But anybody who makes a false claim about it.
Maybe he'll share the benefits of his misdeeds, I'd be ridiculous.
Diamond Jim. Look, when somebody puts forward something like this, you say, no, look, that's not quite right, okay? And you confront them. That's the easiest way to deal with any of this. Of course, the difficulty is if you can't confront them because what they're saying is the truth, so you don't confront them. Now, so far, it's been yourself, me, Scott Bennett. Who else?
Michael J.
So who else is going to face this sort of problem? It's not the way to deal with this. The way to deal with this is to appear on somebody's show, podcast, whatever, and give us the truth.
And bring Monica along with her.
Yeah, both of them.
So what could be better? Show up with Monica in tow.
Yeah, prove us to be idiots. I mean, do that. But that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
What can happen since they're the same person?
Yeah. Well, they could do something with trick photography.
They could try. They could have a cutout of... cut out of Rebecca and have Monica there with the cut out of Rebecca. I mean, there are various ways they could fake it. They could Photoshop. They just haven't got around to it yet, Alan. I mean, I expect you're going to see a Photoshop of Rebecca on one side and Monica on the other.
Now that would be something, wouldn't it? Next one, please, Charles. This is from the Fix Your Health site. Now, I especially left quite a while ago. This message here, Rebecca Roth is Monica. Who is Mike? No response. Excuse me. This is one of those sites.
And of course, the Fix Your Health should be a lowercase p and a capital H, but somebody may have not even understood what it meant, so they corrected what they thought was a trivial typo.
Yeah. The thing is that there are still about 12 or so of these sites there with these snake oil products. I think she might try and write it out.
This is the amazing therapeutic grade black pepper essential oil.
Wow. Not at all what you've imagined.
Wow. Learn the many uses of this oil in one quick lesson.
I think this one cures leprosy, Jim.
Yeah, it might help.
Next slide, please, there, Charles. Okay, now, this is a chance for Charles to get involved. Look at this. This was when we put up the video, Rebecca Roth Exposed. Somebody came along and said, the video of Monica has been faked by Fetzer. Voice manipulation of some sort. What do you got to say to that, Jim?
I love Chance's replies. I mean, he says, I don't get in on the drama, but I will say Jim has no idea how to use computer programs like that. I do all the production and he can't even download videos off YouTube. So I can't see him learning that just to burn Becky. I love it. I love it. I love it.
And then she comes back with a standard kind of troll approach saying, are you saying there's something wrong with Rebecca kind of thing?
Wait a minute. Before you get there, she says, I didn't mean Fetzer personally, Mr. Producer. Are you hinting that Rebecca has a persecution complex? Why would she pretend to be harassed by Jim? What axe has she to grind? Her books are doing well. She's popular on the talk circuit. As far as I can see, she really is being harassed. The better question is, why is he hell-bent on exposing her? If anyone's character is questionable, it would be Mr. Fetzer's. Amadon did not ban the Sandy Hook book. They just carried it until they found it was plagiarized. Is that true?
Well, is that true, Jim?
Well, this is absurd. It's got 13 contributors, for God's sake. I had to get all their permission to put it together. The idea of plagiarism is simply absurd. I mean, this is somebody who doesn't understand anything about publication, authorship, whatever. This is just a complete fabricated piece of drivel.
Yeah, this is.
Drivel, Alan, just drivel.
This is one of the trolls.
Clearly.
Before you guys go to the next slide, did you guys know that that comment has already been deleted from YouTube?
Which comment?
The one that you guys were just reading.
No, that's interesting. Look at what Dreadnought says in response. Nope, I think you're wrong there. I got other examples of Becky's voice from the Fix Your Health sites on YouTube. I received a tape of a one-hour audio from Jim and compared it to Becky, and I made the call, not Jim. So you will, in fact, be meaning I faked the tape. Nobody faked the tape. And if we ignore the audio used on EP, which exposed her, you can still find her on other Fix Your Health tapes on YouTube, Alan Powell. Nice comment, Alan.
So, you know, you can spend your life putting these people straight. This one is, this is, I think, another op. And she gets pride of place at the top of the comments, and it stays there.
It's been taken down. That's very interesting.
It's gone now, is it?
Probably because of the accusation of plagiarism.
Yeah. But there's also another thing there. There's a second person talking about evidence.
I mean, there are 13 people to attest that there was no plagiarism involved. That's quite a formidable battery of witnesses.
Yeah, I think so. But this is the sort of stuff that goes up. This is the disinformation that goes up. Next one, please. Now, this one is a kind of just a bantery, waste your time, waste my time. And you read through it, and then you find at the end, it says that she's...
Arthur Snodgrass. The thing is, it was hearing Ms. Roth on a program that got me interested in 9/11 theories. Her insights as a supposed flight attendant seemed authentic. I don't see the question of how many planes were in the air as being crucial, at least for someone who is new to the subject, as I was. After watching videos of the planes passing into the building like ghosts, I tend to think that the impact videos were doctored. But believing Miss Roth initially didn't do me any harm, I don't buy the theory that she was out there to keep planes in the air going or to deflect attention from our government. That doesn't make sense. My off-the-cuff theory is that she was put out there as an asset and that possibly her specific mission is not clear to us.
So the obvious response there from me is the two tower planes were not in the air and she has them being hijacked, clear? Well, this looks like it's a waste of time to read.
Well, Flight 11, North Tower, of course, appears not to have been in the air based upon Bureau of Transportation statistics records, which show it wasn't even scheduled that day. Flight 175, however, turns out to have been in the air. It was simply over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower. So it clearly did not crash into the building.
But you see what this guy says, Jim. I don't see the question of how many planes were in the air as being crucial.
Yeah.
This is just idiocy. Of course it's crucial.
Right. We've been told there were four. One of them crashed in Shanksville, one of them hit the Pentagon, and two hit the North and South Towers, respectively. And none of that appears to be true, but he does not regard that as crucial.
Well, he says she doesn't do him any harm. So it's okay if she lies, as long as she doesn't affect his opinion.
But then he's believing falsehood, so does he not recognize that his false belief based on Rebecca's testimony is doing him harm? And if he wants to comprehend what happened, he can't do that based on false beliefs.
But he doesn't understand that, Jim. It's a very, very simple proposition for someone like you or myself to understand, but seemingly it's lost on a lot of people. Next one, please, Charles. You get people who agree with you, like this one. But this brings out this stuff that we've just come across this morning. This is clearly her and her co-pilot, Ramjet. She got panicked last night and claimed someone tried to kill her friend and she wanted to shut down her FB page. But now she got big support of all her FB friends, so she will go on with her hoax. Her FB friends is blind for the new strong evidence in this video. This guy's obviously from Sweden or somewhere. But
has a functioning brain in his head.
He does, yeah. I mean, his English is probably better than my Swedish. Now, he says this stuff about her trying to be, that someone was trying to kill her or someone she knew or something. This is all just twaddle.
Yeah, of course it's twaddle, but it's intended to imply they're two different people. That's the reason she says it.
So
exposing her is malicious and leading to put other persons at risk. I mean, it's a clever gambit, Alan. For anyone who understands the case, of course, it's transparently fabricated, but there it is.
So will she come on and tell us what happened about this attempt on someone's life? And were the police called? And did they make a report? And
Not a chance, Alan.
I think this would have just been a YouTube post that will disappear into the mist of time.
But this fellow continues, nobody tried to kill her, but she claims somebody tried to kill a friend of her, believing that was her. I think she hit the panic button when she got busted and tried to close down her Facebook. But the idiots still support her. Drool, I think he means.
Oh, that's lol.
My English is not my first language, but I'm not a troll or a Zionist. I think that's very clear.
Yeah. Okay, the next one, Charles. And
R.G. Robinson Fetzer is making...
Let's go back to that one, Charles.
What happened, Chance?
There he is.
Fetzer is making up shit. Roth never badmouthed him. She only brought up Fetzer to address the fact that he attacks her constantly. Also have to laugh at these two fat fucks trying to ridicule alternative holistic health practices. These two have gone off the deep end, turds and punch bowls. Where is this guy coming from, Alan? How ridiculous. I wasn't bad-mouthing her. I was pointing out that there's some oddities about her case. I have three blogs, one of which you authored, and, of course, we've discussed her on more than one occasion here. I mean, is this supposed to be a response to Rebecca Roth exposed?
This is just another piece of disinfo. just nonsense. But if you get say 10 people setting up these posts as a job of work, day in, day out, 8 hours a day, that's what we're fighting. That's what we're fighting. Next one, please. And this one is completely off the point.
Whippoorwill Organics. It is also interesting to note that Rebecca Roth is quite disdainful of the flat earth concept. It's not a theory. It's just truth. Now, Mr. Fetzer, you have a PhD in the sciences, but you were taught error and it was intentional. Anyone with an advanced degree in the so-called sciences is going to be hostile to the concept of a flat earth. Just by the nature of the concentration, I think you should look into it more deeply and thoroughly with your mind open to what you find. No preconceptions. Nobody has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on an, I presume, education.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Rebecca a flat earther?
I'm not sure.
If Rebecca's a flat earther, I'm not going to worry about what we're hearing.
Well, this video, of course, was nothing to do with the flat earth. So I said this video is about Becky Roth, not flat earth. I have some magic beans if you'd like to buy them. Next one.
Go ahead, Alan.
This is a call for unity. This is, oh, hang on, don't argue like this. This is very petty. And it turns folks off of being truthers in inverted commas. Where's it all going? So you basically say, well, look, she's pushing fiction and you just have to face up to it. To Johnville, I said, well, think on this. There are tapes of calls from the planes. The planners don't realize you can't call from planes. Up to there, the calls are fake. She revives them and says they were made from elsewhere on the ground and the planes were around on the day they were hijacked. This is what she says to interviewers. Whatever is written in the fiction books, she keeps the existence of those tower planes on the day in the air. They were not there. And if I've said that once in a response, I've said it at least 50, 60 times. It's still not getting through to a lot of people. Next one, please, Charles. And this one, oh, this is a good one. You can read this one, Jim.
Okay. Max One Media. Are you trying to say Israel and Mossad were not involved in 9/11 now? I know Fetzer used to think Mossad was involved. What changed? This video is disappointing at best, and I don't trust this channel any longer. My sense is that you two clowns are the real gatekeepers. The giant man with a beard thinks that natural medicine is a joke and he should only drag his large ass to his doctor for a big pharma cure.
So,
of course the Mossad was involved, for God's sake. What reason is there to think I've changed my mind? Rebecca's a fraud, but what she says about Mossad is correct.
Well, this 5'6" giant here responded by saying, and my wife says my ass is taut and firm and not large at all. It's just not worth wasting. It's not worth wasting your thought
excellent,
on. Really.
Excellent.
Next one, please, Charles. Oh, here's a good one. The puke with the beard runs his mouth and says nothing. Hey, you dumb FXXXS. They were hit by remote controlled military aircraft, you stupid SXXXS. It's been out for years, 12 exclamation marks. Do you know that Henry Fowler's usage on the linguist language says that the overuse of the exclamation mark is an indication of an ignoramus?
Yeah, well, I don't think we got it down here. This guy, ridiculous. They were remote control aircraft, but they can't have been hit by remote control aircraft because remote control aircraft are real aircraft and they would have crumpled against the building, fallen to the ground or exploded, and none of that happened. So this guy is a nitwit.
Well, I responded by saying, puke with the beard here. What's the evidence? You'd never get any response from these sorts of people. Next one, please.
Well, you're being a good sport about it, Alan.
It's pointless getting concerned over it. And this is another one of those, all us truthers must stick together. Do you want to read this one?
Sure. Marvin Sains, in all these comments, nothing about her theory. Nobody's read the books. Nothing about Zaremka's essay. Nothing about the logistics of Logan, Newark, Dulles to Westover or some other airfield. That's what I wish some researchers would look at. Sick of bashing each other. I'd give up a shitload of truth for a tiny bit of unity. Well, that's not the right measure. We should be unified around falsehoods. I mean, that's really a very pointless remark.
No, I think what he's saying is, Jim, that we should all be friends together, and it doesn't matter what the truth is. We should just be nice to each other.
What is this supposed to be, a social club?
That's not the way investigation works, is it?
I don't think it is, Alan. I mean, that's just simply ridiculous.
Well, I responded by saying, you choose your friends, I'll choose mine. The next one's nice. Guys, how about the evidence?
Yes, I think you jumped past one. Am I wrong? You're good, Chance. You were right. Okay, here we go. Number 14. Baron Thompson, guys, how about some evidence to back up your claims? Do we really need to listen to this health show for this long? I think 1 minute would have been enough. Jim, seems like every episode with Alan is jam-packed with lots of speculation and very little evidence. I was a big fan of the real deal. Right now, I'm starting to question some of your claims. Yes, you could be right. But where are the facts? Where's the evidence to back these claims up? Simple request. Provide links and evidence. My God, I thought we had. He didn't find links and evidence in the Rebecca Roth exposed? I mean, that's a bit much.
Well, he says, how about some evidence? And then he claims that we gave him too much. 1 minute would have been enough.
The audio show that her voice is the same. She has the same verbal gestures, the same laugh, the same coquettish style, whether she's Monica or Rebecca. She looks the same. When you put a wig and glasses on Monica, you get Rebecca. That's not too tough to appreciate. And third, her partner on each show, Michael and Monica, on the Fix Your Health show, and Ramjet with Rebecca on whatever she calls her new show, is the same guy. It's the same guy. Now, what's the odds and probability of that? I'm telling you, we're getting this. It's so overwhelmingly likely that they are the same person that to deny it is to become irrational, because the alternative that they're two different people is no longer reasonable. We have therefore established the conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt. Plus, her overreaction to the criticism is hysterical. It's off the page. It's absolutely ludicrous. And that can only be because she's been outed. There's no basis whatsoever for these vicious, unwarranted, sleazy attacks on me, unless she's upset because she's been outed. Up to this point, she's even been boasting about drafting a screenplay, which would entail big bucks. And I think all that has now been blown out of the water. So,
yeah, I'm afraid
Baron Thompson, I think you missed the mark.
We've blown the wheels off the little red car, I think, as far as the script goes. Now, when you look at this, when we think that what we actually put into one show, a 2-hour show, I usually knock up about 100 slides, something like that, usually.
Yeah, sure.
And that's what I call the evidence. And I never say anything that's not backed up by the images that we show.
Yes.
And I
don't make claims I can't prove either. I mean, this is really ludicrous. You know,
I mean, I only say it because of the picture of it.
Baron Thompson is awful quick to give me and us the heave-ho.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to be persuaded. I mean, the evidence is there. If you have ears to hear and eyes to see,
indeed.
And if you figure you got the same running mate on both shows, I don't think it's a stretch to support the conjecture I offered at the beginning of the show that they're married.
No, not at all. That's not a stretch at all. I mean, I wonder if this guy knows how much we leave out.
Alan, she'd need to be doing this with somebody who knew the real deal about her so she wouldn't get in trouble because he'd start questioning her identity.
But just for people like Baron Thompson, he's got no idea how much we leave out. I mean, a lot of the time you're saying to me, hurry up, Alan, we've got to show. And a lot of the time I just have to say, okay, let's quickly go through the pictures and give one-line explanations. We just have so much evidence that we can't really show in either an hour or 2 hours. That's the way it is. And this guy's saying, you know, show even more. Show even more than you can't actually show because of time constraints. Anyway, next one, please, Chance. You can read this one, Jim.
All right. This is Arthur
Snodgrass.
I think we had from him before. The thing is, it was hearing Miss Roth on a program that got me interested.
This is the same one. It's next one, please, Chance. Sorry. There we go.
Alan DeLarge Jones. I'm pretty sure she is still right about one thing, and that is that the Jews, Israelis, Mossad, were heavily involved in 9/11. Obviously, the Zionists could not have done 9/11 without Dick Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, etc., and were probably used by the neocons to start the dismantling of the Middle East for Israel and the neocons' benefit. Well, he's absolutely right about that. It's pretty evident that no planes were used on 9/11, but that does not really change the fact that Israel, American Zionists, and U.S. neocons did 9/11 with or without the use of planes. It was a false flag on the largest scale, and the Jewish media covered it up for the U.S. neocons like they always do. Correct.
Yeah.
So people like Monica, Rebecca, and Judy Wood are very irrelevant and harmless in the 9/11 truth movement. I think a person like Alex Jones has become far more dangerous to the 9/11 truth movement because he refuses to even mention a peep about Israel's involvement in 9/11. As we now know, Alex Jones is either a Jesuit or Zionist shill and is totally controlled opposition with a very large audience and is the guardian for Israel and U.S. Zionists.
So we get the deflection there from what we're actually talking about to somebody else.
But that was a very reasonable post. I agree with most of what he says.
I agree with the first two paragraphs.
Yeah.
But I just don't agree with this because she doesn't do much harm. How do we know what harm she's doing at the moment? She's got a whole bunch of people believing.
Well, she's inflaming a whole bunch of people against you and me, Alan. I mean, you know, she's even giving them my location as though she wants to send them out to do bodily harm. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, my response was, I don't think anyone who consciously lies to the American public is harmless. So let her be because she's a con artist, but not an important one.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. What do you do? Do you start measuring up what the bad influence of these actors is? And you start saying, well, this one actually only set the charges in the World Trade Center, and this one didn't actually hijack the plane, so they're less blame. You don't do things like that. You, if you're in it, you've done something wrong, and that's the end of it. You're either on the side of the right or you're on the side of the wrong. And what this is doing, it's given us two fairly good things in the first two paragraphs that we can agree with, but it's not a sting in the tail. It's a deflection in the tail. It's just taken our interest.
I think this person
away.
Is sincere, but doesn't quite appreciate.
So do I. So do I.
Yeah. Okay.
Next one then.
You want me to read this?
Yeah, go on then.
Telomeres. Dreadnought, now you are attacking me? I basically agreed with Fetzer's expose regarding her being in disguise, using a nom de plume, etc. So now you need to ID me also? Why the aggressive rhetoric against anyone that may agree with the connected dots revealed in her allusion books indicating the killers, regardless of the author? Wouldn't you agree they, that is the killers, should be our target? I'm sure that you will be able to track me down like you did Roth's identity, if you think you need to ID me also for some reason. How exactly was that done? Clue us into your intelligence connections. If I wanted to attack Fetzer or you, whoever you may be, I would accuse him of being a fraud and a plagiarist of George Harrison tapes. George Harrison tapes from 1999 that constitute the basis of his fall expose, practically verbatim. I have no idea where this is coming from.
The only words I've ever written
about Paul came from my own mind and hand. I mean, this is ridiculous. And others had, it took years to talk me into taking the idea that Paul had died and been replaced. It took years for them to convince me to take it seriously. And it was only after I encountered the forensic study done by the Italian scientists in the Italian version of Wired magazine, then it was obvious to me we were talking about two different people and that Paul therefore had died and had been replaced. So this is kind of weird. My apologies in advance if the Harrison tapes were credited in some of the discussions. I've not heard such in several shows. Frankly, I've never even heard the Harrison tapes, so I would have no idea what's said in the Harrison tapes. Finally, you are completely off base, inaccurate in the extreme conclusions you draw that I support all the health or other ridiculous claims in any other business endeavors in which the alleged Roth persona participates. Typical smear attempt. We're on to those dated smear campaigns this time, so who do you really work for? I think this was directed at you, my friend.
Yeah, who do I work for? Well, there's the answer down the bottom for me.
Me too. Truth. Truth, justice, the American way.
Well, as cliched as it sounds, that's exactly the criteria we were talking about with Michael and Scott before you got on this morning. And if you can't stand to expose truth, hard lines, you're going to get hurt here because that's what we do.
I think chance is missing the extra slide I sent, but let's go ahead with what we've got here.
Okay.
Working for you. Number 18.
Now, chance, this lady. 18.
This is meant on you one. I've listened to probably 40 interviews of Rebecca Roth. Monica does not sound anything like Roth. I'm a big fan of Jim Fetzer. I've listened to almost every Real Deal episode and have read of his books. He has an amazing analytical mind. I just read his last book on Sandy Hook. Wonderful read. Well, that's all very nice, except that.
Exactly. But when you get to the...
Except that Rebecca sounds exactly like Monica. I don't know what to say. I think, again, this is a very sincere report, but, I mean, look, I've got one here, right here. Let me find it. Here it is. Congrats on exposing this fraudster. That voice is 100% match with Monica Gaynor woman. Looks like Operation Mockingbird is alive and well. I mean,
I've seen that one.
A lot of that, Alan. I mean,
I found that the sort of proportion of we believe yous was about 80%. And I think the rest was basically either abuse or silliness. But this lady went on to offer to make dinner for me. So I said that she'd have to pay the airfare to the US for me. No, she was going to cook, what was it? Bison or something. Moose.
She actually made an offer to cook you dinner, Alan.
Yeah, moose. Yeah,
that's pretty decent of her.
But I told her, I didn't believe in all the hokey cures, and I asked her if, you know, basil oil does cure autism, and she wouldn't answer yes or no. So, and here again is that next one, please, Chance. Here again is that phone number. Shall we phone it again? See what we get.
Goodness. Not even an answering service. Chance, could you look for that extra slide I sent you? It should be in chat. Okay.
What is it we're talking about, Jim?
Well, what I'm talking about is the acknowledgement page from Methodical Illusion. Anyone out there who's been a fan of Rebecca who is having doubt, look, you're looking here, and an ad for FixYourHealth.com, right? Call us, Michael and Monica, the Fix Your Health team, doTERRA. And on page of 289, which Chance is now going to put up, you read, this is the end of methodical illusion. A special thanks to my husband for his patience and understanding through my numerous hours of research and for knowing how important this book was for me to both research and to write. Two, the Fix Your Health team with doTERRA for your products to keep me creative, healthy, and uplifted. And two, the 9/11 Truth Movement for your courage to fight the good fight and to demand a new investigation. Except now she's attacking anyone who actually is more dedicated to 9/11 truth than they are to Rebecca Roth.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan, it's very disturbing.
Yeah, it's...
Chance, you said? 289. You got the book? Page 289. Here, I'm putting it up, Chance. I'm showing it right there. And the thanks to Fix Your Health are right there in the second paragraph. I mean, how can anyone have any doubt about it when, you know, Rebecca is tying herself to Fix Your Health? I mean, this would just be one of the most incredible coincidences in world history, Alan. I mean, he just happens to be thanking Fix Your Health because she happens to use their miracle products and puts it in her book about methodical illusion. And then people should be confounded that Rebecca Roth might be the Monica Gaynor on Fix Your Health. Isn't that an amazing coincidence?
Well, some people have got an explanation for it, Jim. They've explained to me that what she's doing now is very, very dangerous. And she would have Mossad on her tail for what she's telling people. And so she needed to change her name to Rebecca Roth. Well, if you've got some secret knowledge and you're scared of Mossad coming after you as a realistic threat, you just don't show your face and you don't use any name. And you certainly don't set yourself up a website or a YouTube channel like they've got for Fix Your Health and to have yourself on there as somebody flogging off these potions. Somebody else has got an idea that she was set up to fail. And she was set up to fail just for division. She goes around all of the internet talk shows and says, look, this is how it is. Builds up a good following, becomes part of the trope. She knows what's going on. She's going to tell us. And then people like us come along and we kick the knees out from it. And what that's going to do is have a lot of people saying to us, oh, you're just spiteful or she's selling more books. I actually got that one. You're just, what did he say? You're just arse burnt because she sells more books than you. So whatever arse burnt means.
He's implying envy or jealousy, but Alan, it's ridiculous. I mean, these books are works of fiction. If she actually were a serious 9/11 researcher and she claims to have 2 terabytes of data, surely that's enough to put together a book of the length of this one, less than 300 pages.
Is it 2 terabytes, Magic?
Actual nonfiction research. You know, the very fact that they're published novels is clearly a device to make her immune from liability for putting out false information.
Let's just hold it at the 2 terabytes of information level to start with.
Yes.
Is it now actually 2 terabytes she says she's got?
Yes.
Well, if she's got 2 terabytes and she's only basically coming up with 2 fiction books and the stuff that she talks about in all of the shows that I've seen, then her information, 2 terabytes, can't be worth that much. Can't be that incisive.
Well, what I have been told is that she purloined this research from someone else, a fellow named David Cole, who actually is a serious student who'd obtained a mountain of information through Freedom of Information Act requests, and that she appropriated it and that she hasn't given him any credit. She's claiming it's hers.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not in a position to verify this, Alan. I'm simply saying this is a report I've received about the origin of the 2 terabytes.
Okay, and what in those 2 terabytes has she used to show us a lot of new things that have shed a lot of light? Nothing.
Alan, something that struck me about this whole book is the first half is kind of this romance novel. And then the second half, when it comes to the 9/11, they're just dropped here and there. It's like a sentence here, a sentence there. There's no sustained discussion or development of any of this, Alan. The book is very strange.
Well, look, Dennis Camino was quite, he did the right thing by not reading it. You can't be influenced about facts by reading fiction. Now, it might work with someone like Gore Vidal writing about American presidents. You may gain some knowledge that way, but you're not going to gain it through this kind of book about, it's not even really about 9/11. It's a fiction. It's made up. It's stuff that fiction writers make up to sell for money. That's what fiction is. That's what fiction literature is. And we only have ourselves to blame. And especially all these people who just sat open-mouthed on their internet shows thinking, oh, this is it. This is the one that's clearing everything. She cleared nothing up. We know no more about 9/11 than we did before she appeared. So many people were saying it was the Mossad before she came around. It wasn't that it hadn't occurred to anybody. It had, and they'd said it, but nobody had written a fiction book and come on the scene and said, look, here's a fiction book that's going to tell you all that it's about. And then sat in front of a load of gobsmacked men who just let her run her mouth off with her script. Nobody stopped to ask her questions. And when they did, if anybody did, they would immediately get told, oh, I'm not here to argue with you. My time's too precious and all that nonsense. That's exactly what she should have been there to do. And that's what some of us should have done to her. We should have asked her questions about her narrative, her fictional narrative. We didn't. We've only got ourselves to blame.
Alan, you can't believe this. I've just received an article. Tony Mead, professor fired for harassing parents of Sandy Hook victim. Dennis Laherty, New York Daily News, Florida Atlantic University, canned James Tracy, an associate professor for harassing the parents of a child killed during the Sandy Hook school massacre. He claimed the shootings never happened. A twisted professor at a Florida college was finally fired Wednesday after waging a sick 3-year campaign against the parents of one of the children killed in the Sandy Hook massacre. James Tracy, a Florida Atlantic University professor, was let go after years of wild claims that the shooting was staged. The nutty professor received notoriety in 2013 after he wrote a blog that the Sandy Hook massacre in Newtown, Connecticut may have been a hoax. He then began targeting and arresting Lenny and Veronique Posner, claiming their son Noah never existed. This is absolutely stunning. In fact, Tracy is among those who have personally sought to cause our family pain and anguish by publicly demonizing our attempts to keep cherished photos of our slain son from falling into the hands of conspiracy theorists, they wrote. Tracy even sent a certified letter demanding proof that Noah once lived, that we were his parents, and that we were rightful owners of the photographic image. This is so despicable, Alan, I can hardly believe it. This is why the book was banned, of course. It proved that the school had been closed by 2008, that no children had died, and that it was an elaborate hoax to promote gun control. It's got 13 contributors, including 6 PhD college professors, 3 either current or retired. James Tracy has been exemplary in his dedication to truth and principle. This is unbelievably disgusting. This is the way the Obama administration strikes back.
Jim, you're going to have to get him on. You're going to have to expose all of this.
Oh, I've been doing everything I can. Would you believe they published a rubbish piece by the Posners in a journal called The Forward, which is a Jewish journal. And I published a piece, a response, a comment to The Forward, and they suppressed it. And I was pointing out that this was ridiculous. That Lenny Posner had provided a death certificate to Kelly Watt that turned out to be fabricated, and that if he'd actually died, it wouldn't be necessary to have a fabricated death certificate. that Noah Posner is a remarkable young man because he tried twice, first on the 14th of January 2012 in Newtown, and on the 14th of December 2012 in Newtown, then again on the 16th of December 2014 in Pakistan. And that, you know, this man has been attempting to take down every effort to expose the truth about Newtown. I mean, it's completely disgusting, completely disgusting.
It is. That just shows that
Tracy is going to have such a lawsuit here. It's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's going to get, as we've talked about before, he's going to get all the rights of discovery against the Posners.
Yes, 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 yes.
They've shot themselves in the foot.
A blessing in disguise.
Yes, indeed. When I last Skyped Jim Tracy, he said to me, I said, well, look, I'm going to put something on Jim's blog saying, you know, what the Posners are up to. And he said, oh, no, don't bother. I think we'll just let it die a natural death. Now, I thought at that time, what would you do if you were in his situation? Well, the first thing you'd do is you go and see a lawyer and say, look, I've got somebody interfering with my contract with the university.
Yeah, this is tortious interference with contract.
Yeah. So I think he can not only get the university, he can get an action against them, but he can take the Posners in as well. And then he gets discovery against the Posners, and they've got to prove that their son, on the balance of probabilities, died at Sandy Hook. How are they going to do that? Give up the fake death certificate?
Yeah, sure, of course. I published about it. It's even in the book, Alan.
Yeah. How are they going to prove it? They can't. I don't know if they can even prove that he existed. I don't know if they've even got the sorts of things that you have, like videos of the kid. He can subpoena all of that. He can ask for all of that stuff that's related to his action. And it's going to include medical records of the kid. It's going to include videos of the kid. It's going to include just about anything that would be necessary for a court to be satisfied that the child lived. And they're not going to be able to give that. They're not going to be able to produce that as evidence.
I know. I know. This is unbelievable.
What else have you got there, Jim? What else is it
saying? I'm trying to pull up the comment on forward. Because this was so obscene. I mean, listen, they suppressed my comment. So I wrote another comment and it said, forward is willing to publish lies made by a Jew, Lenny Posner, but suppress a refutation of those lies made by a non-Jew, Jim Fetzer. I have resisted believing the Talmudic principle that Jews are allowed to lie to Goyim. But as a Goyim, I'm now convinced by this example, and I will never believe anything published in a Jewish journal again, Alan.
Well, what happens now is that people who watch this are going to say that you're anti-Semite. And they're going to say that you've got something against the Jews. And
I have something against liars. And if some Jews are liars, I have something against some Jews.
I wouldn't give a shit what religion anybody is. If they lie, they lie.
Lenny Posner is a huge liar, Alan.
He is indeed. But he doesn't take any responsibility for his lies because he's part of the National Clandestine Service. He's part of this organization that is teaching American people fear. It continued under Eric Holder, and I've got a lot on Eric Holder to come out in the future, believe me. I've been looking into Eric. It's this thing of war that we talked about this morning with Scott. It's war at home and war in the domestic sense, but the war in the domestic sense is violence. You've got to be afraid. You'll be controlled because you'll be afraid. Give up your rights and we'll protect you. It's a fallacy. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense, Jim.
I'm looking for the comment and forward. It may be on, maybe it's on this computer.
And of course, what will happen now, Jim, is that there'll be a lot of absolute Jew haters who will come out of the woodwork and say, see, we told you so, we told you so. That's just going to happen.
Well, but I'm now convinced. I would never have written such a thing had I not had the direct personal experience.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absolutely outrageous.
Indeed.
Let me see if I can pull it up here.
Now, while you're doing...
Let me see if I can find the original comment, and then I'll read them both.
Now, there was, of course, that point made about Rebecca Roth having both a Jewish surname and a Jewish Christian name. Now, does that mean she's part of some big Jewish... Well, Jesus, you've got so many bloody Israelis, national...
All right, listen to this. Here's what I published on Forward. Are you all they had it up and then they immediately took it down, subject to moderation. James Henry Fetzer, are you all gullible saps or are you knowingly accessories after the fact to the monumental scam known as Sandy Hook? Are you unaware that Lenny Posner gave a copy of Noah's death certificate to Kelly Watt, which turned out to be a fabrication, and that Noah died twice, once at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012, then again in Pakistan on 16 December 2014, or that Lenny Posner has made it his life's work to undermine the mountain of proof that Sandy Hook was an elaborate hoax because he and his wife have pocketed well over $1 million in donations from sympathetic Americans who have given him money? Nobody died at Sandy Hook 2015, which has 13 contributors, including 6 PhD, current or retired college professors, provides 425 pages of proof that the school had been closed by 2008. It was a two-day FEMA drill with a rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th. We even have the manual, which I made an appendix to the book. Paul Preston, an LA school safety expert, was so disturbed by what he saw on television that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, who confirmed that it had been a drill, that no one had died, and that it was done to promote gun control. When the book was banned, I released it to the public for free as a PDF. It has had millions of downloads. I am stunned that Forward should be so backward as to be ignorant of the sensation this has caused, where banning books by Amazon.com is comparable to burning books by the Nazis. Something needs to be done to stop the lies and deceit and deception by monstrous liars like like Lenny and Veronique Posner, who are playing us for saps. And Alan, when I discovered they had suppressed it, then I went back and wrote, so Forward will publish lies by a Jew, Lenny Posner, but suppress a response that exposes them from a non-Jew, Jim Fetzer. Even though he, meaning me, is attacked in the article you published, I've never before taken seriously that Talmudic dictum that Jews are allowed to lie to Goyim. But that would appear to be the policy of Forward. Count me as a disillusioned Goyim is not going to place any faith in a Jewish publication in the future. This journal is propaganda.
Another thing we can throw into that, Jim, is the fact that James Gill, the current officer, the chief medical officer, would not verify that Posner death certificate was genuine. I have his emails saying he would not verify it. Now, Alan, that is really, that's strange.
Alan, we've run out of time. Great job with Rebecca. I'm shocked by this. I'm going to call James right now and see if I can get him on the show on Friday already, my friend.
Okay, see you later, Jim.
Thank you, my friend. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Thank you, my special guest for this first hour, Alan Powell, for being here. Stand by for the new JFK show with Gary King and Don Fox and Larry Rivera. We'll be right back.
We can now say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's...
Assassin Scenario, a world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off, pal. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
To come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie.
It appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
Gary, about ready?
Showtime. Okay, the show's on. All right, we got the new JFK show this week.
Okay. This is new JFK show number 85. Hopefully we'll have Larry Rivera with us tonight. We've got Don Fox. Hopefully Jim Fester can...
I'm right here.
Stick
I'm right
around here, a little Gary. Bit, and we've got... awesome. All right, we've got Chance George in the engineer's chair, and we've come up with some interest next to Jack Ruby. So go ahead and let's start the show, Don.
Okay, I believe we had a couple of YouTube clips. Should we play those first with the Oswald press conference?
Sure.
Play the longer one, or I guess any order you got them, Chance will work. You know.
All right. Are you going to be able to stay with us tonight, Dr. Fetzer?
Yeah, I'm going to be here. Now, Larry will not.
Okay.
Power went out in Puerto Rico. He can't join us.
Wow. That's something
else. Larry was going to have a lot to say, but we got the clip going or no?
Yeah, the clip is played. It's we're back on the air now.
Okay, Don, go for it.
Okay, so we just saw a 15-second clip that showed Jack Ruby at the Friday night press conference in Dallas. So
that turns out not to be Rabin, Don.
Yeah, but Jack Ruby was there.
Of course, Jack Ruby was there. It's just that that's not Rabin beside him, as we had conjectured.
Well, you know, the conjecture came from some other places, and it does look somewhat similar, but I think that definitely warrants further study.
So. No, Larry's done the further study, Don. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Yeah, I saw that, Jim. I'm still – it looks like Rabin to me, I guess we'd put it that
way. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, when we get Larry, we'll go through it in greater detail. Go ahead, Don.
Okay, so Jack Ruby was at the press conference serving as an interpreter for Israeli reporters. So one of the comments I got this week was, you know, last week, you know, we kind of blew through stuff in a hurry, and they're like, hey, were you guys referencing a book? And, yeah, we were. And a lot of the material from last week came from page 19 of Final Judgment. So I thought, you know, if we've got a couple minutes here, I could just read a few paragraphs that.
Go ahead, Don.
Kind of make everything clearer for the audience, you know, where exactly we're coming from. So this is on page 19 of the e-book of Final Judgment, which you can find on the internet. I think it's about paragraph 2. So although the Secret Service objected for security reasons to the publication of JFK's motorcade route, Sam Bloom, who was the point man for the Dallas Elite, nonetheless made sure a map of the route was repeatedly published in Dallas papers. Plus later, when the Patsy Oswald was in custody, there was a plausible explanation as to how he knew JFK would pass by his workplace. That an assassin quite probably fired on JFK from the Dell Tex building is most relevant in the context of an Israeli connection. Co-owned by David Weisblatt, a major financial backer of the Israeli lobby's Anti-Defamation League, Dell Tex housed, on different floors, a number of firms that utilized the telephone number of Morty Friedman, an attorney, garment manufacturer, and activist in Jewish affairs. Since JFK was working to stop Israel's nuclear arms program, which received smuggled uranium from U.S. sources, it is notable that one Dell Tex firm linked to Friedman was the Dallas Uranium and Oil Company. It is also intriguing that one of Friedman's Dell Tex business partners was Abe Zapruder, the Jewish dress manufacturer who filmed the assassination and profited immensely. Today there are some who now believe that Zapruder had advanced knowledge of the assassination. And once the accused assassin was in custody, it was, you guessed it, Sam Bloom, who had earlier maneuvered JFK into the kill zone, who pressured Elgin Kroll, the city manager, to in turn pressure Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry into making Oswald accessible to the press and to move him publicly from the Dallas police station to the city jail. Thus, the situation was in place for Jack Ruby to move in into the kill. There are several sources, including Dallas FBI agent James Hostey, who stated Bloom and his backers were the forces behind this. When the police searched Ruby's home, they found a slip of paper with Bloom's name, address, and telephone number on it. So that's kind of the gist of last
week. Well, you know, it's interesting that he was, you know, printing the map, yeah, so they could claim falsely that Lee was aware of it. I mean, that was a clever move when it would have been, you know, obviously inappropriate to do that, although many in Dallas obviously would have wanted to watch the motorcade.
Yeah, but I think the larger point here in this thing was the Dell Tex building. There's a lot of intrigue going on in there. So we've got David Weisblatt, who co-owned the building, and then we've got a number of – and he was also a financial backer of the Anti-Defamation League, an organization we're all very familiar with.
Yeah, I've been on their hit list. I was one of the top 4 or 5 anti-Semitic 9/11 conspiracy theorists a couple of years ago, Don.
Right now, don't forget they weren't mining salt over there in the Dow Tex building. It was a uranium mining company, which is a the main thing, main ingredient for nuclear weapons. So they were, as they say, Iran is doing now, they're trying to enrich uranium. Well, where do you get your uranium from? Well, the Dow Tech's building.
Well, Larry, Iran is only enriching uranium for the peaceful use of nuclear energy. Iran is not pursuing nuclear weapons. Our own intelligence agencies already concluded in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, which they reaffirmed in 2011. Even the Mossad in 2012 concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, which they reported to the Israeli government 3 weeks before Benjamin Netanyahu went to the UN and asserted precisely the opposite. Americans, even presidential candidates, don't understand this $150 billion we're giving to Iran is unfreezing Iran's own money. That's not coming from the American taxpayer. And the sanctions that we've imposed upon Iran are violations of Article 33 of the Geneva Conventions of 1949 that specifically states that no one can be punished for a crime they did not personally commit. These are what is known as collective punishment that qualifies as a war crime under the Geneva Conventions. So even the sanctions on Iran are war crimes being committed by the United States on a sovereign nation.
Right. And I find it interesting that they were telling, that John F. Kennedy was telling Israel the same thing that Iran is being told today, that we'll be doing inspections. In fact, I had the letter from Kennedy to Ben-Gurion. I was going to read it, if y'all don't mind.
Please do.
Go for it.
All right. Here we go. Dear Mr. Prime Minister, I welcome your letter from May 12th and am giving it careful study. Meanwhile, I have received from Ambassador Barber a report of his conversation with you on May 14th regarding the arrangements for visiting the Dimona reactor. I should like to add some personal comments on the subject. I'm sure you agree with me that there is no more urgent business for the whole world than the control of nuclear weapons. We both realized that this when we talked together 2 years ago, and I emphasized it again when we met with Ms. Goldemeyer just after Christmas. Dangers in the proliferation of nuclear weapons, national nuclear weapon systems, are so obvious that I'm sure I need not repeat them here. It is because of our preoccupation with this problem that my government has sought to arrange with you a periodic visits to Dimona. When we spoke together last May, you said that we might make whatever use, you said in 1961 that we might make whatever use we wish of the information resulting from the first visit of American scientists to Dimona, and that you would agree to further visits by a neutral party as well as the American scientists. And I was assured by Ms. Mayer's comment that there would be no problem. We are concerned with the disturbing effects on world stability which would accompany the development of a nuclear weapons capability by Israel. I cannot imagine that the Arabs would refrain from turning to the Soviet Union for assistance if Israel were to develop a nuclear weapons capability, with all the consequences that this would hold. But the problem is much larger than the impact on the Middle East. Development of a nuclear weapons capability by Israel would almost certainly lead other larger countries that have so far refrained in development of their nuclear weapons program. And I feel that you must follow suit. As I made it clear in my press conference on May 8th, we have a deep commitment to the security of Israel. In addition, the supporters of Israel in a wide variety of other ways, which are well known to both of us, which are not declassified. All right, so the last paragraph. I can well appreciate your concern for developments in the UAR, but I see no present or imminent nuclear threat to Israel from there. I am assured that our intelligence on this question is good and that the Egyptians do not presently have any installation capable to Dimona or any facilities potentially of capable nuclear capability. But of course, if you have the information that would support the contrary conclusion, I would like to receive it. through the Ambassador Barber. We have the capacity to check it out. I trust this message conveyed a sense of urgency and the perceptive in which our view of our government, in which I view your government's early assent to the proposal by Ambassador Barger, which is that they were going to have peaceful uses for their nuclear weapons program. So there it is right there. John Kennedy standing in front of the nuclear program by Israel.
Well, it's all profoundly disturbing, Gary, and I'm very glad you read that letter, because I think that led to Ben-Gurion's declaration to the Mossad that they should support the assassination of JFK and his resignation so that it would not have been directed by a current prime minister of Israel.
So you're saying he stepped aside in time?
No, he stepped aside. It's like Edward Lansdale resigned from the Air Force temporarily to coordinate the assassination of JFK, so he wouldn't be doing it in his role as an officer in the Air Force. These are charades. These are formalities that are charades.
Another angle on the Ben-Gurion resignation I've heard is that their Dimona project was about halfway through, and it was really ramping up, and Ben-Gurion wanted to buy some time, so by resigning, that would give the next guy an excuse when he came in. Well, hey, I haven't got to the bottom of everything yet, you know, yada yada. It takes a few months, and just a way to kick the can down.
With JFK.
Yep. Yeah, until they could get rid of him. Yeah.
Very good. Very good, Don. That's a good observation.
There's pictures.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, there's pictures of T-Bar Rosenbaum with as early as Eisenhower. There's pictures of Richard Nixon with T-Bar Rosenbaum. When you talk about Sullivan and Croswell, if I'm saying it correctly, who basically Alan Dulles worked for, these are all the same people, and they're all in, it seems the whole goal of everything was the Israeli nuclear, I mean, the state of Israel, and it's being able to dominate the world from the Middle East. And it seems like everything that's been going on has been for that goal.
Yeah, let's just go back in history. So Israel became a state in what, was it 47 or 48?
48, I believe.
Yeah, and so the JFK assassination was in 63. And since 63, haven't we seen Israel just rise up and dominate the Middle East?
They dominate us.
Yeah.
They completely dominate us. And I've said it 100 times. If any person would Google United States, dual citizens, Israeli American citizens, you would realize that every position in the Pentagon of any importance is held by an Israeli American. The Treasury, the Teachers Union, on and on. It's all Israeli Americans running our government, and it's just blatant.
To this day, Gary, you're saying today, that's true today.
Right now. And also, you will not find a picture of John F. Kennedy with Henry Kissinger, but an easy Google search, type in United States Presidents, Henry Kissinger, and there's a picture with every single one. Not just some, all the way to Obama. And there he is right there. So it's when they killed Kennedy, it's when the takeover of our country by Israel. I mean, who took over the country? Was it Cuba? Was it Russia? No, it's Israel. And we are it's hard to say. We're their whore. Okay.
But we are. Yeah.
We are bidding for them. We die for them. And at least they were nice enough not to bother to let us know that they took over the country. They just continue to let us believe that we're God's chosen country and we're spreading freedom and democracy everywhere we go. And we're fighting terrorism at every turn, when the manufacturing of terrorism comes from Tel Aviv and Washington, from all my research. Any comment, gentlemen?
Yeah, anybody that's done any homework at all on 9/11 knows how many dual Israeli citizens were involved in the project for the new American century. So to me, when it was mentioned that, hey, the nukes used on 9/11 came from Israel, well, as it turns out, they may have been U.S. nukes that were remanufactured in Israel. But let's face it, it was the Israeli nuclear program was probably the driver there. There's a direct historical path from Dealey Plaza to Ground Zero in New York, and it goes right through Tel Aviv.
All the way to San Bernardino.
Yep. And you look at the players in JFK, and, you know, as we mentioned, okay, the Daltex building, that was full of Jews. You know, Jack Ruby, he was Jewish, most likely a Mossad operative. I mean, he was on the Bronfman payroll.
The trademark.
Yeah, he shoots the patsy right in the basement of the Dallas police station. How does a regular mobster, like a Tony Soprano type, how would he get access to the basement of the police station to even get close enough to shoot him? I mean, that just doesn't happen. He couldn't have been just a regular mafia guy.
Yeah, right. And when you're interpreting for Israeli reporters, you're one heck of a strip club owner, I'll tell you that.
That's exactly it.
Well, I think you're both right in that Jack Ruby, in fact, in relation to the assassination, was the local arrangements chairman. The phone calls he was getting from mobsters around the country just grew astronomically right before the event. And he played a much more important role than is generally ascribed to him. They say, you know, how could he have known when they were going to move Oswald since it had been delayed? And the fact is, it was the other way around. They waited until Ruby was in place before they moved Oswald.
Yeah. I
mean, it's amazing how they'll contrive these things to try to manufacture arguments that have no basis.
Mm-hmm. And last week, gentlemen, we were talking about Ed Tatro. I'd like to bring that up for a second. One of the main things that I forgot to bring up last week is when he was at the conference, when he said, you don't look for the assassin of the president of the United States at the Trade Mart. You don't look at the Trade Mart. So I found him defending Clay Shaw, but wait a minute. Yeah, we do want to look at the Trade Mart. Come to find out, this is about as Zionist, it's the World Zionist Organization. It's all about running guns, running drugs, everything for Israel. I mean, it was made up by the Zionist Congress, for God's sakes. So there it is right there. So when I hear Ed Tatro say that we should have looked, that Jim Garrison should have looked at the mafia and not look at the Trade Mart, as he says. And by the way, I did ask David Denton to get a hold of Ed Tatro, and I haven't heard anything from either one of them. And I'll be surprised if we do, but if he's afraid to come on this show, here's what I will ask you. You said not to look at the Trade Mart. Well, we're looking at the Trade Mart, and we're finding an awful lot of stuff at the Trade Mart. Okay, Jim Garrison was whistling Dixie when he was looking at the Israeli connection here, and that's all there is at the Trade Mart.
Who was suggesting we should not look at the Trade Mart?
Ed Tatro.
Ed Tatro, yeah.
I know we were talking about him last week.
What's going on with Ed Tatro? You know, I used to be told this Ed Tatro, wonderful guy, brilliant, knows so much about JFK. And now he's dropping bits and pieces that are misleading and appear to qualify as disinformation. What's going on here?
That's a great question. So, yeah, we'd like to get Ed on and ask him a few questions. You know, let him.
He's defending Clay Shaw. Look, we're not going to attack anyone. We'll be more than respectful for anyone that comes on the show. Now, I think it's a legitimate question why you're saying that he should have looked at Carlos Marcello. He should have looked at Clint Murchison. Wait a minute. I played a gig. I played guitar in a little band for the Marcello family several times. Okay? They are not controlling the world. And they might have a lot going on, but just trust me,
we got a problem.
House in Metairie, Louisiana, outskirts of New Orleans, and it's a modest house. Better than your average house, but it's a modest house. He's not running. So why would we be looking there when when there's just so many other places to look. Like the, who was the lawyer? Blakeney? Blakeney was suggesting that we look at the mob. So that's where I'm coming from. When it comes to these conferences, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, so when it comes to these conferences, here's what I have to say. Number one, Ed Haslam, I look back on your show, Dr. Fetzer, you were interviewing Ed Haslam in 2006 or 7 about Dr. Mary's Monkey.
Yeah.
It was 5 years ago that me and Lee came out. All right. So you go to these conferences and almost everyone there, this is not new information whatsoever. When it came to the handling of the coffin and all that, you could have gotten all that information from watching The Men Who Killed Kennedy. So yeah, it was cool watching Barr and McClellan talk about LBJ and all that, but they know exactly where to stop. And when it comes to Sam Bloom, they're not bringing it up. All right. And then to have the audacity to say that, I'm sorry for you Jim Garrison people, but he should have been looking more at the mob and around Clint Murchison and all those guys. No. He should. And the thing that really set me off is when he said, you don't look for the killer of the president of the United States at the trade mob. Well, yes, you do.
Don't
look at an awful lot of stuff.
Yeah. Don't look at Clay Shaw, Louis Bloomfield, Tibor Rosenbaum, Edgar Bronfman.
Who's saying this? Tatro?
Yes. Yeah, Ed Tatro. Yeah, he's saying don't look at the trademark. And well, look at all Jim Garrison. Now, a lot of JFK researchers love to sing the praises of Jim Garrison, but when it comes down to the real Garrison investigation, they're all doing they're backpedaling.
Right. A little sidestep.
Yep. Yeah. Then do a little soft shoe there. You know. And a little tap dancing, you know. No, we're not looking at the trademark. You know, that Garrison was great. Well, Clay Shaw, all of his connections were basically Jews.
Zionist, yep. Israeli connections.
Yeah, we're
all about Israel, and it has been ever since. From the day that Henry Kissinger moved into the White House, it's been all Israel, and they have been incredibly successful at just taking over everything, just everything that we own. And all they have to do is hit the print button, and it's theirs.
I mean, I've always, you know, I started out in life being a JFK. Okay, yeah, we got that question last week. I didn't get a chance to respond, but here, okay, I've got the movie JFK.
Sure.
I got it on Blu-ray. Sure. Great movie. This movie changed my life. I look at the world a whole lot differently ever since I've seen this movie. But the question came in, hey, do they go all the way or is it a limited hangout? And I think the answer is it is somewhat of a limited hangout.
Well, yeah, but look. Oliver Stone was being advised by Robert Grodin.
Don. Listen to me.
Just give me a sec,
Jim. Let me just finish up here, okay? I'm not going to sit here and bash Stone and Costner. I mean, could they have gone a little farther? Yeah, I mean, I didn't make the movie, but, you know, they did leave some stuff out, I think. That's my point.
And I'm saying, look at the circumstances under which he was producing the film. He was being advised by Robert Grodin. Two of the three faults I have with the film were responsibility of Robert Grodin. Grodin was assuring him that the Zapruder film was authentic. Grodin was assuring him the man in the doorway was Billy Lovelady. The third issue on which I fault the film, which is a masterpiece and far superior to anything ever presented to the American people through the mass media in terms of what happened in Dealey Plaza on 22 November 1963, is he only posits three hit teams when there were at least six and possibly even more. Now, I went to the Roxy Theater in San Francisco on the 48th observance, Don, and I was there with Judith Berry Baker. I was there with St. John Hunt, and I was invited there to give a critique of Oliver Stone's film. We played the director's cut, and I explained how well he had done that in three respects. It was inadequate because the film had been massively edited. because Oswald, well, I don't know if I was even talking that much about Oswald in the doorway a couple of years ago. Maybe I was. I'd have to look, but I'm certain I must have been because it was one of the points I made. And the third, of course, that there were six shoot teams instead of three. But look, Don, considering all the work that's ever been done here.
Oh, it's not even close. Yeah, it's a brilliant movie. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, but the point's been made to me. Well, the executive producer was that Israeli arms dealer, Milken, Michael Milken, I believe. And okay, fair point, you know, but having said all that, I mean, has any other media outlet put out that much truth about JFK in any sort of, mass media? No.
Right.
It's like, okay, you know, I guess I would liken it to say Donald Trump. You know, great candidate, and people are like, well, he doesn't do enough of this, or he hasn't said enough about that. I'm like, well, you can't pick nits, you know, all the damn time. There's nobody.
Look at how much good he's doing, how he's cutting through all the crap and getting a lot of truth out to the American people.
Yeah.
And politicians are bought and sold like commodities.
I mean, he's destroyed the Republican Party. So for right there, I mean, he has been a massive success. And just as, okay, even if it is a somewhat limited hangout, this movie destroyed. I mean, make no mistake, there would not have been an Assassination Records Review Board had it not been for this movie.
That's right.
You know, so even if, hey, well, it was a big Jew financed it, yada, yada, arms dealer, you know, but still it got our cause further down the road. I mean, we're a lot closer to the truth today than we were in 1990. Let's face it. And you owe a lot of that debt to this movie.
Oh yeah, Dr. Fetzer, I have to tell you this. I got a chuckle yesterday from the very same clip from last week that we played with Jim DiEugenio.
Yeah.
Talking about Israel. And just a few moments later, Leno Sanek said that we've been on for 16 years now. And a few moments later, they said that they were going to be looking into the possibility that the limo stopped in the near future. And he said, you know, I have no problem with learning things stop.
You're kidding me.
No,
yeah, there was.
I'm willing to learn things. And he said, we might have John Costello on. He makes a few good points about that. Yeah. So, all I can say is I don't know how many years we all have left to live, but if you got to wait 16 years to get the limo stop, well then I don't have another 16 year old for them to get to the Lee in the doorway.
And I guess my larger point all of last week's show was, okay, so DiEugenio came out and said, hey, I've been spending 20 years hardcore on the JFK case, and he can't find any evidence for Israeli involvement in the assassination. I mean, he must not be looking very hard. I mean, what the hell, Jim? I mean, DiEugenio, he's pretty good on certain things. There's no doubt about it. But he leaves a lot on the table, and he likes to take after people.
DiEugenio is an op. I have no doubt about it. I mean, you know, might as well call a spade. Anyone who can do the deceptive stuff he does, you know, qualifies. There's not a set of criteria you could establish for a legitimate JFK researcher that DiEugenio satisfies.
He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. But if you sit and you start analyzing it's like a lot of the people that you run into on 9/11, where they just bring you around in circles. You know, like the Judy Wood crowd, you know, it's just circles and circles and reflection. And
we will never know who killed the president of the United States. That's one of his famous sayings. We'll never know. Now wait, when you hear someone say that, you better change channels. That's for sure.
Well, that's like, well, we'll never figure out what happened on 9/11. Well, if that's your attitude, why are you in 9/11 research? You know, why are you in JFK research if you don't want to?
You know, someone is a shill when they offer a statement like that.
I mean, if you're a defeatist, why don't you just sit at home in your basement and click the clicker like everybody else in America? You know, get out of the way. Let some of us with a little motivation and some skill get after it.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes.
And I think we're going to do a little work. Has anyone looked into the possibility of William Colby being the man to the left at the midnight conference?
I think that Phillips may actually have been there too.
David Atlee Phillips?
Yeah, David Atlee Phillips, yeah. Colby could have been there. I think it's worth looking. There's one photograph where you can see most of those who are close, up close and personal fairly clearly. And I've long believed that Atlee Phillips was among them.
Well, I'm telling you, it's a splitting image of William Colby, the future head of the Central Intelligence Agency. I've done a lot of looking, and I have to go along with Don a little bit. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's so close to him. It's just so close. The nose matches so many things, and we do have to look into it a little further. I'm not quite conceding just yet.
Yeah, and you know, we had the round robin email over the weekend. You know, and one of the commenters on the show last week said that, you know, Barry Chamish, or Chamish, I'm not sure.
Chamish.
Yeah, he had identified Rabin as being in that photo with Ruby.
Well, yeah, but, well, if he had, you know, I wrote to him and invited him on the show, and he said, he just wrote back and said, not my view. I invited him to come on and talk about it, Don. I think because you had suggested to me that was his finding, but he wouldn't do it. He didn't want to have anything to do with it.
So, yeah, I'm not sure if he actually ever said that or not. You know, it would have been nice to get him on and have him clarify it, because he's done a lot of, I mean, whatever you think of the man, he's done a lot of work on Yitzhak Rabin. His work was more in the line of who actually killed him, who assassinated Rabin in 95. You know, and as it turns out, Rabin was probably one of the better Israeli prime ministers we've seen come down the pike.
Yeah, well, I was a little rather surprised, all things considered, that he should have been in Dallas. But we have independent sources of other Israeli leaders in Dallas, do we not?
Well, his wife, Leah, she came out and admitted that Yitzhak was in Dallas.
Really?
Yeah, Leah Rabin. That's my source on it. I think it was Rabin's biography. Leah Rabin mentioned that. So now, what was Rabin at the press conference? It's possible, you know, but it's by no means a slam dunk. Was he in Dallas? Yeah, his wife puts him there.
I think that's bad enough that his wife puts him there. Where did she do that?
Oh, I believe it was in his biography, and I can dig up that source. I read that like 3-4 years ago, and I'll have to go look it back up again.
All right. Okay. Would y'all like to take a couple of questions as we close out the year? Because we're going to be off the next couple of weeks.
Sure.
Well, explain. We're not going to be off. That we're going to have pre-recorded shows, Don.
Yeah, I did have an idea. What do you think, Dr. Fetzer? When you began on NBC, Chance's channel, one of the very first shows that we had was On the Road with Dr. Fetzer, where you, Larry, and myself had gone around to all the spots in New Orleans. So the channel was getting on its feet at the time. So I was thinking about playing that one again, because we get so many more views now. Probably Chance had 30 or 40 subscribers. Now he's got 3,000 or so. So I was thinking about playing that show again, because it didn't get the traction that I think it should have. And then on the following week, so what we're planning on doing next week for Christmas, we're going to have a pre-recorded show, and we're going to have another one for New Year's. And I'm thinking about taking one of the better shows from David Denton's conference from last year.
Gary, you don't have to announce it now. It's just we don't want to give the public the impression we're not going to have a show.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. Now, if you got some questions for us, yeah, go for it.
All right. Perhaps the leak that the New York Times by the White House on October 63 about any coup d'etat being attributed to the CIA was made as a direct response to the Diem assassination. Also, Oswald was tricky, and he probably knew that he would likely be photographed in the doorway, just like registering to vote in Clinton and leaving his name in the registration box, thus leaving crumbs to show he was not the shooter while pointing at the likely culprits. And the other part of the question, another great upload for truth, and comes out the better. And well, there's more proof that JFK and the CIA were involved in killing Kennedy. Garrison's work is so important. I would also like to see a show on Joseph P. Kennedy and his link to Myra Lansky and the bootlegging days as well. All right. So what do you think about – I remember exactly who when he put it right on the front page of the New York Times. It was Astor or – do you remember?
Putting what on the front page of the New York Times?
Kennedy had one of his friendly reporters put on the front, I think it was the New York Times, that if any coup d'etat comes to this country, it will come from the Central Intelligence Agency.
I think he had Ben Bradley of the Washington Post publish that, Gary.
Right. So what this man is suggesting is, well, I already know that he put that on the front page.
No. Look, this comment is a very good one. He's suggesting Lee was leaving breadcrumbs. I think that's a very intelligent observation that Lee knew what he was doing. I like that comment. I don't see that as, disputatious. This was simply, I think, a contribution to understanding the history here. I think it's a very good comment.
And about maybe a possible show on Joseph P. Kennedy?
Sure. Yeah, good idea. It's a good idea.
I wanted to chime in on that. I was reading a little bit about Joe Kennedy this week, and one thing I maybe didn't know or had forgotten about was Joe Kennedy was actually involved in Hollywood
way
back in the day. And he was getting – back then in the 20s and 30s, he was already getting tired of the garbage that the Jewish producers were spewing out in Hollywood back then. He was trying to put out some semi-quality movies, but – he was getting, he was having a hard time competing with, the tribe out there, and he didn't have a lot of good things to say about them. So, yeah, we're going to probably talk about Joe Kennedy a little more in depth.
We'd certainly have a show on Joe Kennedy. I mean, it's a good idea. We'll book it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Gary.
All right. Yep. Doorman was Lee Harvey Oswald, but I find some of the claims made here to be highly questionable. Such as, for instance, that Lee was standing in the center of the doorway at the school book depository. The evidence that he was relatively close to the left pillar as we view the doorway. As a matter of fact, he stood very close proximity to the black man, Roy Lewis, so could not be as far away from that side as in the middle.
This is just wrong, Gary. This is a perspective thing. From the angle the photograph was taken, it make it look like Lee was further to the left than he in fact was physically. Ralph Sinquet has done a reconstruction. We know where Lee was. This isn't debatable. This is just misinterpretation about perspective.
Well, it is true. When I looked at the picture, it does look like, because of the perspective, but now that we've been to Dealey Plaza, I do realize that there is a column there, and he is in the middle of the stairway. I do recognize that now. But it is difficult to see, and it does look like he's standing in the corner. So I can see where this person could be mistaken. All right, he says, all right, the next one. Hey, you bunch of dip whatevers. I guess we'll not use that word. Lee said he was in the lunchroom at the time. All right, so go ahead, Don, on that one.
Lee said he was in the lunchroom at a certain time before the assassination. He never said when the motorcade went by, to best of my recollection.
Right. It's in Will Fritz's notes when he was asked the question. He was out front with Bill Shelley.
He said he was out front. Yeah, he was spotted in the lunchroom at like 12:25, I believe.
But
the motorcade came around, he was out front.
So Rousen K believes that after the shots fired, he was in the doorway, and then he went upstairs. It takes a little while because you have to go up through some stairs and all that to get to the second floor.
Victoria Adams never seen him.
No, Victoria Adams did not see him either. All right. Where is the evidence of the back brace he was wearing that day? I see nothing in the Warren Commission about the back brace. I would think it would be a very important piece of evidence besides JFK's shirt and coat.
That's a good, Jimmy, have you seen any reports ever, autopsy mentioning JFK wearing a back brace?
Sure, of course. Yeah, he had the back brace on when he was shot. That's one of the reasons he couldn't fall down, you know, or get out of the way. He had his back brace on, particularly tight.
Have you ever seen any evidence of it after?
Sure. It was removed. It was removed in trauma room number one.
Okay.
And it was left behind with his shirt and jacket in violation of autopsy protocol. Look, I got all that in Assassination Science, published in 1998, okay? This is not new news. Now, what was this? I was distracted. What was this guy asking?
He wanted to know if there's any evidence of the back brace.
Yes, the answer is yes, absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Okay, the next thing, why hasn't there been a government investigation of the Kennedy assassination since the Warren Commission and the HSCA?
Why?
I mean, that's like, why hasn't there been a 9/11 investigation since the 9/11 commission? I mean,
well, the government's trying to suppress it, for God's sake. I mean,
they're not trying to.
There's not a big mystery here. And when the HSCA did it, they tried to do it better. They completely altered the evidence. We had a fist-sized hole at Parkland. All the witnesses attested to it. You can actually see it in frame 374 of the Zapruder film. David Manning confirmed it in the x-rays, which had been altered to conceal it. When the then Humes took a cranial saw to the head and created a much larger wound. I liken them as the relationship of a heel to a footprint to make it more look like a shot that had been fired from behind. But when the HSCA did it, they returned it to a little tiny hole at the top of the head. I mean, how much more blatant can you get that the government's covering it up? They went back and redid it in 1976-77, the way they thought it should have been done to cover it up in the first place. But it was all a sham, a complete sham.
All right. This guy asks this question every week, so I figured I'd finally get around to it for him. All right. It is so obvious at the eight-second mark when the limo suddenly appears like magic that the film was doctored. The first shot happened during the sharp turn on Elm, that the evidence of Kennedy or the windshield being hit is cut out. I watched Bill O'Reilly's Killing Kennedy and realized O'Reilly has zero credibility and is, as an agent of the government industrial media complex, shadow government. It was so simplistic and that it made a grade school telling Christopher Cummins seem like an incredible story. Well, all right, so what do you have to say about that?
He's got a ridiculous book out there, Killing Kennedy. It's just a whitewash. It's a very bad book. He only gets around to the assassination at the very tail end of the book, and it's very poorly done. O'Reilly is a disgrace when you come right down to it. He had me on a show in 2006 to talk about 9/11. He barely gave me the chance to have a word in. He wanted to treat me as a prop. I didn't take that kindly and let him know during the show. But O'Reilly, frankly, is a very much inflated ego who likes to pontificate and tell everyone what's the truth when he doesn't have the evidence to back it up. Some people accuse me of having similar traits, but I have the evidence to back it up. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference right there. But what do you believe of his early work? Was he trying to get to the truth at the time?
Well, I haven't been reading a lot of O'Reilly books. I happen to know about this one because it's about Kennedy.
A lot of people say, well, what about his deal on Inside Edition? You know, back in the early 80s, he was doing some work on Inside Edition on JFK. And you know, I had seen a couple of those. I think I'd seen a couple of those reports. I'll have to go back to YouTube. I think they're on YouTube. I'll watch them again and we'll give them. Whenever I see Bill O'Reilly, I just kind of hit next. I can't spend like 20 minutes breaking it down. It's like, you know, I can't watch another Judy Wood 9/11 presentation or another A&E 9/11 truth. You know, yeah. Watching Bill O'Reilly, I'd rather listen to Jim DiEugenio every week.
It's tough.
This is a little bit of a wild show tonight, all things considered.
Sure. All right. Connolly said they're going to kill us all, which seems like an admission in plain sight, and that there was foreknowledge of the event. How did he know that there was a they?
And who?
Connolly.
Repeat this.
Yeah, John Connolly.
Yeah, John Connolly. Said they're going to kill us all. Well, Connolly knew. Connolly, of course Connolly knew. I mean, there was a huge argument between LBJ and JFK that morning. Lyndon wanted to get Connolly out and Ralph Yarborough in. JFK overrode him on the ground that the chief executive of the state should ride with the chief executive of the United States. Look at the photos that morning. They should have been in a festive mood and a buoyant attitude. John Connolly looks extremely grim because it was too late to get the word out to the shooters that it was going to be Connolly, LBJ's friend, whom they would not have wanted to be harmed, rather than Yarborough, whom he would have wanted to have been killed. But the fact is that they weren't able to get the information, led to Connolly being wounded, which obfuscated the politics. So if Lyndon had had his way, it would have been increasingly obvious that this was a political assassination. The fact that Connolly was wounded, although Lyndon didn't want it, actually worked to his benefit.
All right. Next, you want to comment on that, Don?
Jim pretty well said everything that needs to say.
Okay. All right. I want everyone to know what Jim Fetzer believes, and he has written extensively about UFOs and alien contact impacting our world society. Just letting you know.
I haven't written about UFOs or extraterrestrials. That's something I've left alone. There was one time when I was going to look into it, and I had 10 books here in my office stacked up. If I were to get serious about UFOs, and that's when Obama launched the raid into Pakistan to kill Osama bin Laden for the second time, I was distracted and I never got back. So I'm open to the possibility. I mean, when you have such an infinitely large universe, practically speaking, such an enormous universe with so many different solar systems and the like, it's highly probable that life has evolved elsewhere in the universe. But whether it's ever made a visitation here, I'm intrigued by the Roswell documents, which appear to be authentic to me, that report a craft having crashed and a couple of strange-looking aliens having been taken into possession, deceased, not alive. That's all struck me as very plausible, but I've never got into the Discovery Project. I've never pursued it. I'm open to it, but I'm not sure exactly who should be regarded as the reliable authorities. Anyway, it's just an area where I've not done enough research to take a firm stand.
All right. It looked like they're trying to discredit you. Now, last week we were talking about Ed Tatro again. I'm going to bring him up. That he had been on Rob Clark's show several times. Okay. Now, Dr. Fetzer, are you aware who Rob Clark is? He's the one that has a website dedicated to discrediting you, Ralphson K, and myself.
That's honest to God, Gary, I spend so little time looking at our critics who, you know, have a considerable rope where the sun doesn't shine that, it doesn't ring a bell. You just tell me about it. What about
it? Well, he has a site dedicated to discrediting you. Remember, he was
right
at the conference last year. Remember the fat guy, the guy that looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy? Rob Clark. So anyway,
when we were there in Arlington at Judas Conference, he was there?
No, when I was in Washington, I ran into him.
Oh, okay.
And then come to find out that his goal and mission in his life is to discredit Jim Fetzer. So the reason I'm bringing this
Well, look, Gary, I wish him a lot of luck, okay? Now, I can start with the 3 volumes on JFK. You can go to the 1 volume. There will be another on 9/11. I founded Scholars for 9/11. You can look at the book about Wellstone, which has been praised high and low. You can look at my 30 articles and my new book about Sandy Hook. There will be another forthcoming on the Boston bombing. He's got a lot. And take the Moon book, for crying out loud. He should go wild over the Moon book because so many controversial issues are discussed. Now, when he has something to bring to the table, we'll bring him on the show. We'll bring him on the show and we'll discuss. When he can marshal a serious argument about any of my work, let us know and we'll bring him on the show.
Now, the reason I bring that up is because our Mr. Ed Tatro, who I've been calling out a couple of shows now, has been on his show several times.
Oh, has he now?
Yes, he has. And I've sent out an invitation for Ed to come on our family show.
So is that a Jim Fetzer debunker, too?
I've never heard Ed Tatro talk about you, Jim. Ron Clark.
Down his own road, but like I said, sometimes you can watch someone a few too many times, and you can start catching on to them.
Yeah.
Don't look at the trademark. Well, we decided to look at the trademark, and it's leading us. All roads lead to Israel. No doubt about it. So, all right. Now, before we go for the holidays, we're going to have some great shows. So, now be sure to look us up on YouTube. Let's look back at the year. And what do you feel we've done? What should we do in the future? Are we in danger of covering things that have been covered ad nauseum?
I'll tell you what, Gary. We got a lot of stuff.
Update there, guys. Oh. It's been a year that he's been on that Jim's been on the network for NBC, so it's like one full year of him here, and he's had well over 1.5 million, almost 2 million views just on his Real Deal playlist. So I mean, it's phenomenal from where it starts to, and then it like I said, it spreads out all over the place. I see copies of the channel and just multiple shares of everything. So I mean. Just from a standpoint of if the hits count for the people out there, it's phenomenal, especially when you get to some of these bigger networks that pick up Jim's show and it goes out to all those things. It's pretty cool.
Right. The radio shows go on the Revere Radio Network, radiofesser.blogspot.com. It's on Firehorse Radio Network. It's on All News Network by Chip Tatum. It's on Stu Web Radio. So these shows, once we make them here, is by no means the end of the road and you wait for the rerun.
Hey, let me just say, by the way, as a general policy, if anyone out there like Jim DiEugenio or this Rob guy or Ed Tatro has a bone to pick with us, let us know. We'll bring them on the show. We'll give them an opportunity to present their point of view, and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, we did a show with Wayne Costi and Tim on 9/11 earlier in the year, and we shut up. We let them talk.
You know? Absolutely. We would do the same with any of them. So if anyone's out there has a bone to pick, if they can make a serious case that they got a real issue, we'll bring them on the show. I just want them to know as an invitation in general, because we are open. We don't regard ourselves as infallible. We may take strong views because we do our homework, but that doesn't mean we cannot make mistakes. So if anyone out there, if an Ed Tatro or is it Rob Clark or Clark or
Seamus Coogan?
No, Seamus Coogan. Jim DiEugenio wants to come on. Let us know about it. Give us a draft of what they'd like to discuss. I'll be glad to consider it. And Gary, let me say to you and Don and Larry, I think you've been doing a terrific job this year. I want to wish you the best for the holidays, and I look forward to rejoining you in Common Cause in the coming year, 2016.
All right. This has been the new JFK show number 85. Y'all have a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we're going to bring more truth coming up than you'll be able to handle. Thanks, gentlemen, and it's an honor working with you guys. Merry Christmas.
Our pleasure, Barry.
DonaldFox.wordpress.com.